the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The debate is on in Oxford, Mississippi, on the campus of Old Miss, the University of Mississippi. Senator John McCain and Senator Barack Obama will be debating foreign policy tonight. The debate is live, national broadcast at 9 o'clock. And today we're going to be talking about that debate. It's back on the front burner of the news because it's looming before us now in just a matter of about 4 hours. But the big issue for our conversation today is what we as evangelical Christians should hope to hear out of that debate. I want to ask you point blank, what are the issues you hope will be addressed? When you think about foreign policy, what are the big issues of your concern? Are you thinking primarily about the war on terror, Iraq and Afghanistan? The whole issue of Islamic terrorism, are you thinking about Darfur and the human rights crises across the world, that one probably being the one that is now most on our minds? Are you thinking about the threat of nuclear proliferation with especially Iran and North Korea is very much pressing concerns? Are you thinking about ecological issues, global warming in terms of foreign policy, having to do with such things as the Kyoto Protocols and other international agreements? Are you thinking about increasing international competition for finite resources, in particular the rise of China and India? As evangelical Christians concerned for human rights with a specific theology of human rights, what should we be looking for from these two candidates tonight? To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to be talking about what we will hope to hear, and I'm also going to be offering some suggestions with this particular debate in mind of what we should be looking for and listening for, and in particular how parents might help to incentivize and lead the right kind of conversation in the household about what we should be seeing in these debates. I know Friday night's a busy night, and as a matter of fact, it's busy for all of us. But I would really suggest that if it's at all possible, you make sure that you and your family are sitting together watching this. Don't just watch it on different television sets, different parts of the house. Watch it together and engage each other in a meaningful conversation about how Christians should think about these issues. That's a great opportunity for parents to help to create the right kind of conversation and to guide that conversation. Let's start it right now. Just give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK, foreign policy. Given the Constitution of the United States is largely in the hands of the executive. So the President of the United States, who operates also as head of state, bears the lead responsibility for foreign policy. Thus, electing a president is electing a foreign policy. What are you looking for? How should we think through those things? Barack Obama and John McCain debating them tonight? Let's get ahead of the conversation here on the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I was asked to contribute an article at On Faith, where I'm a columnist, the project of the Washington Post and Newsweek magazine. The question posed has to do with Roe v. Wade. Should Roe v. Wade be overturned? The context is the 2008 presidential election, where Sally Quinn and John Meacham of the Washington Post and Newsweek magazine, respectively, are asking the question, should we look for the overturning of Roe v. Wade? The particular way the question is expressed right now at On Faith is this. John McCain and Sarah Palin say it's time to overturn Roe v. Wade, the 1973 Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion. Do you agree? What is the right moral choice? Well, I had to respond to that one. My article is up this afternoon at On Faith at the Washington Post and Newsweek magazine. I'll summarize by saying this. The lamentable legacy of Roe v. Wade contributes to the poisoning of America's culture, continues the corruption of our moral consciousness. The 1973 decision represents a judicial usurpation of the political process and the declaration of a new constitutional right, quotation marks around the word right, to destroy fetal life. This set the precedent for further assaults on human life and human dignity. Roe should be reversed because it took the power to establish law out of the hands of the people and their elected representatives. Reversing Roe would not end the abortion debate, but would send it back to the 50 states where the people can have their say. Furthermore, Roe is based on a sliding scale of human dignity, with its arbitrary and unsustainable division of fetal life into trimesters of increasing legal significance. The decision is just what it was known to be at the time, a badly constructed argument that had much more to do with Justice Blackmun's own personal agenda than with either law or medicine. Roe is a compact with the culture of death. So long as it stands, America is the land of abortion on demand. Every pregnancy is a tentative pregnancy. Every fetus is in danger. Every American is complicit in this tragedy. Now, the reason I raised several of the points in that response dealing with Justice Blackmun's opinion is this. Anyone who knows anything about the Roe v. Wade decision from 1973 knows that the court was looking for an opportunity to legalize abortion, at least a majority on the court. And even those involved in the writing of the decision, and it was done under the auspices of Justice Blackmun, knew that it was a decision in search of an argument rather than an argument that led to a decision. The legacy of Roe v. Wade is absolutely horrible, but the construction of the argument is atrocious, dividing fetal life into three trimesters. Well, number one, that was unsustainable in 1973. That was entirely arbitrary, but now it's even less meaningful and more atrocious because what has happened is advances in medical science have pushed back viability so far that you're looking well into the second trimester rather than the third trimester for the viability of a human fetus. It just points to the fact that this was not really a matter of the court's proper jurisdiction at all. Roe v. Wade, if reversed, would not make abortion in America illegal. It would reverse the question, return it to the states. And in the states, you would have what you had in 1973, almost assuredly. You would have some states that would be pro-abortion and some states that would not. Would I be satisfied with that? No. Morally satisfied? No. Legally satisfied? I would believe that at least the question is returned to the people who can express their will through elected representatives. Would I be satisfied to see abortion legal in some states? No. I would want to help to change the opinion of the public in those states so that the public would move to prompt elected officials to no longer treat abortion as a so-called right. But at least it would return it to the political process where each can have his say. The arguments can be made in the public. And those who are running for office as the public's representatives in the legislature and as governors would make their own positions known, and the people could therefore make their choice through their electoral vote. Leaving it in the hands of the judiciary, when the Supreme Court just usurped the authority here of the people, is a bad precedent that has led to worse. It's very interesting to look at some of the other responses at On Faith. John Shelby Spong, the retired Episcopal Bishop of Newark, New Jersey, a man who's embraced just about every heresy imaginable. He, of course, is very much pro-Roe v. Wade. I want to read to you one paragraph from his article. He writes, "Will any politician be this dumb and actually play with this fire? I doubt it. But if they were to do so, it would mean that sectarian religion would now dictate public policy. Roe v. Wade was passed by the Supreme Court because abortion was a crime and its availability as a legal, medically safe option was producing disastrous consequences." Why would people in the right mind want to go back to that? Why people in their right mind would want to go back to that is beyond my comprehension. Well, I have no idea how many things are beyond his comprehension, but the bottom line fact here is that when you look at this argument, he doesn't even reference anything that would have anything to do with a distinctively Christian argument at all, writing as a retired bishop of the church. Not only that, he says that if Roe v. Wade were to be reversed, it would mean that, quote, sectarian religion would now dictate public policy. Well, in 1973, the day before Roe v. Wade, is he with a straight face arguing that sectarian religious policy was or a doctrine was dictating public policy? Of course not. That doesn't make any sense at all. But nonetheless, that's his argument. But the first time John Shelby Small makes sense to me, I'm going to worry about myself. A very interesting argument by Pamela K. Taylor, who's the co-founder of Muslims for Progressive Values. Very interestingly, she argues that according to her own conscience, abortion is wrong and immoral. But nonetheless, she's quite ambivalent about how it should be in the law. The most interesting one for a lot of people, perhaps, is Starhawk. One name, that's all you need. She is a Wiccan priest. She is, quote, a prominent voice in modern Wiccan spirituality. That's witchcraft or pagan religion. She says this, "Women are moral agents, and in the goddess and pagan traditions, we are each our own spiritual authority. We have a right to wrestle with these issues ourselves, not have them predetermined for us by government authorities. We have a right to determine what goes on inside our bodies. To deny that right to women is to invite government intrusion into all kinds of private and personal choices. Overturning Roe v. Wade would open the door to state control of our most intimate and tender decisions and be a step closer to a totalitarian regime. Well, let me just point out again that here you have the worldview clash right before us. She says straightforwardly that according to her worldview or religion, the goddess and pagan traditions, we are each our own spiritual authority. Well, if we are each our own spiritual authority, we can each be our own president and Supreme Court and legislature and Defense Department as well. We're just a world unto ourselves. If we really believe, there is no authority to which we are accountable. We're going to be back to talk about the foreign policy debate tonight at Old Miss. John McCain and Barack Obama, what do you hope to be said? What do you hope to be asked? What do you hope to be the concerns? Give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The issue tonight in Old Miss on the campus there of the University of Mississippi is going to be foreign policy. And the two debaters, of course, are going to be Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain, the Democratic and Republican nominees for the office of President of the United States. Foreign policy is one of the major responsibilities assigned by the Constitution to the President, who is, after all, not only the chief executive and commander-in-chief, but is also the head of state. And for that reason, the President is indeed the determinator of the foreign policy, and there is so much going on in terms of the world these days. Foreign policy is probably rightfully first. Now, interestingly enough, let's just bracket this issue. I can guarantee you tonight there's going to be a lot of conversation about the American economy, given the current crisis in the financial system, and that's going to be talked about one way or the other. But the big issue assigned to the debate time tonight is foreign policy. I want us to think about how evangelical Christians should anticipate this debate and think about what we would want to have asked and what we would want to hear as answers from both of these candidates. Let me just set the stage by saying that evangelical Christians have a big stake in foreign policy. In particular, there are two issues of primary concern. The first is human rights. Now, the secular world has a notion of human rights that has to do with the fact that it has developed over time, increasingly, that people have assumed that human beings, as individuals and as groups, but particularly as individuals, possess certain rights, and those rights are to be respected. So thus, one of the major secular concerns around the world is where those rights are abrogated or violated. Christians look at human rights with a more substantial argument. That is, we believe that every single human being is made in the image of God and thus is of infinite worth. And thus, every single human being is not merely to be respected as a citizen of the world, but is to be respected as one who is made in the image of God, given the gift of life, and thus to be respected as one who, as an image bearer of God, possesses certain rights, yes, but those rights are really the rights of the Creator, reflected in every one of his creations. Thus, to violate the rights of an individual is really to assault and insult the Creator who made him, in whose image he is or she is. It's a different argument. It's a deeper argument, I would argue. But for that reason, evangelicals have, both historically and theologically, a much more substantial reason to have the urgent issue of human rights before us. The second issue is really a subset of human rights, and that has to do with religious liberty. There is a real concern, historically and legitimately, indeed urgently, that we speak up for those around the world and for the right of every single human being to have freedom to worship and freedom to evangelize and freedom to bear witness and freedom to articulate his or her deepest beliefs and to worship in the way that he or she sees fit. That's just an essential. Without religious liberty, there is no such thing as human rights. Human rights without religious liberty turns out to be a fiction. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The issue tonight is foreign policy. At the debate and also on this program, what do you want to hear? Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Todd's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Todd.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mueller. I'm a former military intelligence officer, and what I would ask is I would like to know our nation's long-term strategic goals in regards to China. Experts have concluded that in less than 25 years, China will need another planet Earth at its current growth to sustain its natural resource needs. And looking back in the context of history, Lebensraum, that's Hitler, wanted living space. Japan struck America as a preventive measures to sustain its natural resource needs in the Western Pacific. I'd like to know, how do they view China, this nation that's spending more money on its military than Russia, that's growing what would seemingly be exponentially as far as its people and its needs?
Yeah.
And a okay. Short vision. We're looking out our window, but we don't see the big picture as Americans, I don't believe.
Todd, I appreciate the call. Let me just get right to a quick response on that and say that China has to be very much in the forefront of any president's understanding of foreign policy and concerns on the international scene. You're talking about one nation that represents such a large percentage of all total living human beings. You're talking about a nation that geostrategically plays a very important role, not only in the Pacific Rim, but increasingly beyond. That's one of the things that's the history of China. China was, at one point, the hidden kingdom. It really wanted to insulate itself away from the rest of the world. And even in more recent decades, China, unlike, for instance, the Soviet Union, has not involved itself in many international adventures. China is warming up to expressing its will and being involved in the affairs of other nations worldwide. How that ends up, I don't know. I can tell you one of the most pressing foreign policy issues where it relates to a third country, an issue between the United States and China, has to do with North Korea, which was understood for many years to be a satellite of China. Of course, that explains the whole issue of the Korean War, a war that, by the way, is still a war. There's a ceasefire that was declared. There are a truce. That war has never been actually declared to be over, and because hostilities between North and South Korea continue. But China's position vis-a-vis the nuclear non-proliferation efforts related to North Korea, that's very crucial. One of the big issues of evangelical concern related to China, and I really appreciate what Todd raised in terms of China's increasing energy needs, resource needs. Very interesting, he mentions Lebensraum, which was, of course, in the Second World War, one of the major ambitions of Hitlerite Germany, of Nazi Germany, was to create living room, basically to the east, and thus its conquest of nations to the east was to get living room, also natural resources, which Germany was quite short of. China also, and Todd made this point, is going to be unsustainable in terms of expansion and its own natural resources. And so big legitimate issues there. But I want to say that one of my main issues with China is the human rights issue of necessity. As an evangelical Christian, I have to say that one of the major issues related to China is the fact that it denies its people religious liberty. There are churches, yes. There are house churches that are illegal. There's an official kind of Christianity. But that's all. The fact that we even have to define it that way illustrates the problem. There isn't a legitimate freedom of religion, religious liberty in China. And for that reason, it's just not to be accepted among modern nations as respecting human rights. Not yet. It's got a long way to go, as we well know. The current milk crisis, or the baby formula crisis, in China is one illustration in terms of that government's handling of the issue of a very different understanding of humanity. And that gets back to a difference of worldview. And boy, that's right where evangelical Christians have better be paying a lot of attention. Todd, thanks for your call. You're going to get a free copy, an autographed copy of my new book, Desire and Deceit, The Real Cost of the New Sexual Tolerance, from Multnomah Press. It'll be sent to you, and I hope you get that information to our folks here. And the first two on-air callers today will be getting an autographed copy of my new book. Let's go to Lakewood, New Jersey, New York, where Marty's on the line. Go ahead, Marty.
Yes, as Christians, we're called to be peacemakers. So I will be interested in hearing about how we can pursue the stability of peace and human rights through diplomacy.
Yeah, Marty, I appreciate that. Can you flesh that out just a little bit? Can you perhaps point, even as we're going into a break, we can think about what to talk about when we come back. Can you point to a specific area of the world where you think diplomacy is perhaps particularly needed?
Can I? Well, I guess North Korea would be one.
Yeah.
Iran would be another. China, another.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate you raising that point. It'll be a good point of conversation when we come back. You know, one of the big issues in terms of American foreign policy is where diplomacy and armed force are to be understood to be necessary at any given point. This is a huge moral issue for any nation. And at this point in America's history, it's a particularly strategic question as well. We'll be back to talk about this. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. What do you want to hear in the debate? The number 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Tonight on the campus of Old Miss, the University of Mississippi, the two major candidates for the office of President of the United States, Senator John McCain and Senator Barack Obama, are going to be debating foreign policy. The debate's back on, live tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, and I would really encourage you to watch it, but right now I want to encourage you to talk about it. What is it that you, as a Christian, or even just as a listener to this program, given the fact that you're engaging these issues, what is it that you would want to hear as a question asked, as an issue raised, and as answers given, given what we understand to be very important issues of human rights, religious liberty, and national security around the world? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Marty, just before we went into the break, calling from Lakewood, New York, raised the issue about diplomacy. And, you know, this raises a fascinating conundrum, which is, if you look back at the 20th century, the relationship between diplomacy and what we might call hard force is sometimes very hard to understand. But Marty's certainly right when he said we are called to be peacemakers, and that is absolutely true. And furthermore, Christians have a different understanding of peace than the secular understanding of peace. The secular understanding of peace is that people aren't trying to hurt each other anymore, or that some argument is put on hold. The biblical understanding of peace is shalom. It is the peace that God brings when all things are made well. Now that's why when we pray for peace according to the scripture, we're not merely praying for a cessation and working for a cessation of hostilities. We are praying for things to be made well, for shalom, indeed, to be present. You know, when you start thinking about diplomacy in much of the 20th century has a pretty bad reputation. You have utopian diplomacy with such schemes as the League of Nations, Woodrow Wilson. Looking back at it historically, that appears to have been a very, very utopian. There was a treaty adopted between the two world wars in which virtually all the nations that were involved in the Second World War agreed to outlaw war. Looking back at it, it certainly looked like a big achievement at the time, but it turned out to be meaningless. Diplomacy got its worst black eye when Neville Chamberlain went to meet with Adolf Hitler in Munich and declared that he had come back with peace in our time, when actually what he had done is to sell out Czechoslovakia and invite Hitler to invade Poland. He demonstrated weakness, and Hitler took advantage, leading at least in part to the cataclysm of World War II. But diplomacy also has a very positive image from the 20th century in terms of some significant achievements. For instance, the diplomatic achievements between the United States and the Soviet Union, even during the Cold War, were in large part the explanation for why the global debacle of a nuclear exchange did not take place. Strategic arms limitation talks and other very significant talks between the two nuclear-armed superpowers of the U.S. and the Soviet Union produced in retrospect what we do not have to talk about, which is the legacy of a nuclear war between those two superpowers. Diplomacy also has brought about at least some change in the situation in the Middle East. And there are some other success stories. One of the American success stories concerning diplomacy and foreign policy is the current nation of Libya, which would have been among the very top nations listed as terrorist states just 20 years ago, that is not listed that way now. But even as I'm here speaking about the foibles and the positives and the negatives in terms of diplomacy, the use of armed force plays into every one of those conversations as well. The argument is that perhaps Libya, at least partly, was drawn around by the fact that the United States was at times willing to use some hard force. The development of the treaties between the United States and the Soviet Union ended up being based upon mutually assured destruction, the fact that both nations had the armed force and capability to destroy the other. You start looking at all that and you realize it's hard to know sometimes where diplomacy can be successful on its own and where it has to be backed up with armed force. Sometimes, regrettably, in a Genesis 3 world, the only way to bring about peace is to do so through the use of force. that is a contradiction that should always trouble the Christian conscience. But the Christian conscience has to be informed by Genesis 3 and the reality of the effect of sin in a fallen world. That's often the way it is. Sometimes the failure to use force ends up with a much greater loss of life at a much greater cost. We need to pray for a leader as President of the United States who will have the wisdom to know when to speak, when to use force, when to use diplomacy, and when to back that up with real determined military action. We need to pray for a lot of wisdom in this world scene because the stakes are so incredibly high. I'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The topic is foreign policy because that's the topic of the debate tonight on the campus of the University of Mississippi, Old Miss, in Oxford, Mississippi. And it's important, I think, that we as evangelical Christians, and I want to invite all of you as listeners to this program, to engage the question of what we hope for out of this debate, what we're looking for, what kind of questions we hope will be asked, what kind of questions we hope will be answered in just the right way, what kind of answers we're looking for there. It's been very interesting, some of the issues that have already been raised about China, about diplomacy, peacemaking. We have a very important stake in this. As Christians, there are certain issues that are really important to us for the furtherance of the gospel, you know, but also just because we believe that every single human being is made in the image of God. Thus, we have a deep theological, systematic foundation for human rights and for concern about what's going on, for instance, in Darfur, there in the Sudan. You know, what does it mean? You know, America's in the excruciating position, along with other nations, but our concern is our responsibility as a nation, the excruciating situation of looking at horrible things happen around the world. To what extent can we put a stop to these? To what extent are we called to put a stop to these? To what extent can we go into a situation without creating even greater trouble? Those are horribly difficult questions. But one who's running for president of the United States had better be ready to answer those questions. You can pose your own question by calling the program right now at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're looking at the issues you want to be raised tonight, the questions you want answered. Let's go to Salem, Oregon. Matthew's listening on KPJC. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yes, Dr. Mohler. As a parent, I'm interested to know how these two candidates respond to attacks on parental rights from outside this country, i.e., you know, the UN courts that have had a negative view toward homeschooling and the parents' decisions to discipline, et cetera.
You know, that's where I was hoping you were going in terms of parental rights, Matthew, because those are very legitimate issues, especially when American courts are, to a greater and greater extent, I think wrongly, but nonetheless actually citing foreign court precedents, both from the international court and also from such courts as those of Germany, France, Scandinavia. And that's pretty frightening stuff because parental rights are being subverted all over the place in terms of the fact that well over 30 countries have outlawed spanking, saying that parents can't even discipline their own children in the way that they see to be mandated by Scripture. You have children's rights being abrogated, but more importantly here, parental rights being abrogated when it comes to homeschooling, being denied, the right to homeschooling being denied in a nation that we would consider to be advanced and one that on other grounds would protect human rights, such as Germany. So we're looking at a very complex situation there. You know, Matthew, I also have to think in parental rights about such situations as China's brutal one-child-only policy. So that really is a great issue for us to think about here because we are living in a global world where what happens elsewhere in terms of parental rights is not only our concern because we care for them, it's also our concern because those precedents are listened to and watched and observed by courts and by governments here. Thanks for your call, Matthew. Let's go to Longview, Washington, where Jason's listening on XM170. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, my question is, for the candidates, what are they going to do with Israel, with the attacks against Israel? What side are they going to be on with that?
You know, that is another very important question, Jason. If you are a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, you have to be thinking very seriously about what really is posed as the tremendously, seemingly insurmountable problem of the Middle East, with Israel right at the center. And evangelical Christians will be divided between those who see national Israel as itself a representation of biblical prophecy and those who would see the nation of Israel right now as something of a holding vessel for the Jewish people for their protection. At the very least, we must see Israel as a valuable ally there in the Middle East and as a place where the Jewish people have a homeland, a brave democracy surrounded by hostile forces from the very beginning. You know, at my website right now, by the way, I have a book review up of the biography of Golda Meir, and it's just entitled Golda. You can go to my website. It's still up there on the front page, there for the reading list. It's just another reminder of the danger Israel has faced from the very beginning. And it also, just in terms of reading that biography, and Golda Meir was the premier, the prime minister of Israel from 1969 to 1974. You know, just looking at that some 30 years ago, it's just a reminder of the indispensable role of the United States in guaranteeing the security, even the existence of Israel. And that is a very important issue for us, Jason. I appreciate you raising it. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Justin's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Justin.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller, for your time. I'd love to hear the candidates talk about the war with Iraq. I think that's such an important issue right now, and it seems to be forgotten sometimes. I'm concerned about that.
Well, you know, I'm very interested you raised that, Justin, because I was just observing, thinking about this program, that thus far no one has raised that. We've had callers who've called about all kinds of things, but no one has raised what many people would say is the most obvious issue. Let me ask you, Justin, what is it you hope to hear? What would you want to hear from these candidates about Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, I think that it's important that we know more than just about the success that the troops are having, that we know that there's a plan for what's going to come in the future, that that our country with an economic crisis right now is not going to continue to wear a financial burden for a long time that we are going to get stuck with. But at the same time, we need to walk that balance of knowing that we're doing our best for people who are in need of help.
Yeah, I think that's well expressed, Justin. I very much appreciate your call. You know, thinking about what you just had to say, I have to think, I often have disagreed with Colin Powell's approach to this as Secretary of State back when he was serving in that role. But I do have to say there's a lot of wisdom in what he said to President Bush. I think Bob Woodward in his first book encapsulates this so well about the war. When Colin Powell expressed this as the Pottery Barn principle, the Pottery Barn sign at the front, you break it, you bought it. And that's kind of the way it is right now in that America has lead responsibility for what's going on in Iraq and in Afghanistan until we can get those nations back up on their feet. It is interesting right now that the Islamic threat in Afghanistan is becoming more and more intense. And even as there's good reason for, I think, a lot of hope for what's going on in Iraq, Afghanistan is really becoming a far more dangerous place. And we should be watching that with tremendous care. You know, I would have to say that one of the most crucial issues we need to put on the table here is, of course, Pakistan. Very much on the front pages of our newspapers these days because it's in the Hindu Kush there, the mountains that are in the neighboring area of Afghanistan and Pakistan, where the Taliban appears to be reasserting, reforming, and rearming in a very powerful way, perhaps Al-Qaeda as well. We've got to be watching that with tremendous, tremendous care. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This has been a good start on conversation. I hope you're getting your family ready to watch the debates tonight and have a good conversation about how we as Christians should be thinking about these issues. Back with final thoughts. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. Very quickly, we're going to go to Stephen calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yes, Dr. Mueller. My question is, as conservative Christians, is it important that we go with the Republican Party and everything that they stand for, as well as the social issues, or should we take more of a libertarian stance and say that the social issues should not be outsourced to the politicians, but should rather be handled by the church, by Christians?
Yeah, you know, those are great questions, Stephen. That's going to have to be another show. We're going right into the close of this show right now. I thank you for posing the questions, and just keep listening. We'll get to those. That's a very good issue for us to take up, I think, perhaps in a program in upcoming days. I'm watching the clock run out on me here. Let me just say very quickly that I hope parents will sit down, get your family together, and watch this debate. If you can't watch it live, then make sure you watch it. It's going to be running over and over again. TiVo it, record it, do whatever you have to do in order to watch it. Help your kids to think through these issues. That's one of the most important issues, not only a parental authority and parental rights, but a parental responsibility. You know, you be the persons to really take the lead to help your family interpret these issues. And remember, you're not only raising citizens, you're raising voters, and help them to think through these issues. So we as evangelical Christians have so much at stake here. But, you know, I have to think about what's going to take place tonight. And as I close, let me just draw your attention to the difference between 1962 and 2008. In September of 1962, James Meredith was to enter the University of Mississippi as the university's first black student. It led to riots. Eventually, the Army National Guard had to be called out. There were two deaths in terms of the riots and that response. James Meredith, by the way, is still alive, having been the first African-American student accepted at the University of Mississippi. That was just back in 1962. I'm looking at that date and realizing I was alive then. I was only three, or almost three, a few days from three, but I was alive then. So in the span of my lifetime, in one human lifespan, just in the last, say, 46 years, we have seen such massive change in this country, because now, when the University of Mississippi hosts, for the first time, a major presidential debate, one of the candidates, the Democratic nominee for president of the United States, is an African-American. Now, regardless of your party affiliation and for whom you intend to vote, that says a lot about America and all of it good. Let's just be very clear that we would rather live in a nation where an African-American man shows up as the Democratic Party nominee for President of the United States than the nation where he was denied entry to one of the state's universities. Change sometimes comes slowly, but we need to note it with honor and with gratitude when it goes in the right direction. Back next week, I'll join you for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.